My very first job in financial services was as a debt collector for a bank in the summer of 2006. I'd sit in a call center located in sunny Brea, California, speaking to customers who were late making their car payments. I didn't have an uncle who could get me an internship at Goldman Sachs, so this was my attempt at getting experience in the quote-unquote finance industry. At first, I felt rude and awkward. Not only was I a 20-year-old who had never been responsible for a car payment, or for much of anything, I was also this disembodied voice on the phone asking people very personal questions. This put a spotlight on my own feelings about money. I was raised to believe that people only confronted the details of their financial transgressions and misfortunes in dark, shameful solitude, not through casual openness with strangers. I learned how to talk to total strangers about money, but not in a superficial way like a store clerk telling you your purchase total. No, I had to ask every single customer I spoke to why their car payment would be late. Besides learning how to speak casually about money and how loans and credit scores worked, my time at the bank taught me some things that impacted my view of the world forever. So here is my recipe for why we are weird about money. In a developing mind mixed together, half cup of fears about survival, 3 ounces of feeling confused about how taxes, loans, and investing works, a pinch of your limiting beliefs, a large heap of classism, bake at the temperature of an unequal society from age 0 to now. Results may vary. Being weird is universal. In my career thus far, I've spoken to thousands of people about money. One common thread, regardless of gender, race, sexual identity, political affiliation, and socioeconomic background, is that people are weird about money. I'm sure you're not shocked by this, of course. The recipe is perfect. Negative emotions, plus gaps in information about the world of money and our own minds, multiplied by inequality, equals weirdness and problems. That's basically a formula for your own personal financial soap opera. And all that weirdness can contribute to our financial decision-making in the very few areas where we have control. From a psychological perspective, our external and internal environments, our past behaviors, and how much skill we perceive we have shape and are shaped by how we think about money, what we believe about money, what we value, and the kinds of people we identify ourselves as. I once spoke to a woman who had large sums of inherited wealth, but perceived herself to be the kind of person who stood against economic, racial, and wealth inequality. Her two identities were in complete conflict with one another and caused her great suffering and pain. She was so uncomfortable with her inherited wealth and privilege that she seemed to spend her money quickly, as if to get rid of it. Every month, she received a trust fund distribution and spent all of it before the next one arrived, which resulted in her struggling between each distribution. In essence, living the way many people live paycheck to paycheck. She was struggling to deal with her conflicting identities and her feelings of guilt, shame, and perhaps worth. Psychologically, our brains want to reconcile the conflicts within ourselves by restructuring our beliefs, our identities, or our behaviors. Oftentimes, the behaviors that we choose end up looking like self-sabotage, like this woman. The greatest budgeting app in the world is not going to be the thing that helps her. She needs to examine her weirdness about money. That's the first step. Another woman I spoke to told me that she grew up wealthy and was used to having people do everything for her. So paying her bills and opening up her mail was challenging because of the environment she was brought up in, her lack of skills in managing her bills, and who she identified herself to be, part of the bourgeoisie class that had people to handle her mail and pay her bills for her. Since money was never an issue for her, she never paid much attention to it, even though she knew she needed to. Of course, this resulted in a lot of oversights. She needlessly paid late fees and had a general blindness and ignorance to her personal economics, even despite her relative wealth. Having money doesn't make you immune to being weird about it. There's even a chance it might make you weirder because you might not have been taught the skills to practically deal with money. And if you were taught that it's gauche or taboo to talk about money, you might never ask for help when you need it. I've seen a lot of folks who grew up in environments of poverty, scarcity, and unpredictability who are traumatized, but who also strongly identify as people who are traumatized and victimized. Beyond the actual external obstacles traumatized people face, there is another layer of internal obstacles. When someone strongly identifies as traumatized and victimized but wants financial stability, sometimes the behaviors that get that person to stability are in conflict with the traumatized person's identity. This conflict, like so many others, results in the battle between who they believe they are and how they behave. To reconcile the conflict, they can heal their trauma and work towards finding ways to identify less with their trauma, or behave in a way that confirms their identity of being victimized, which again often looks like self-sabotage. If we don't understand the various psychological frameworks for why people are weird about money, it could look to us like they are acting outside of their best interests because they don't have education or willpower. This is why so much traditional financial advice from experts is so flawed. It's surface level at best because it tends to only address skills and behaviors. It ignores the role of external and internal environments that shape and are shaped by our values, beliefs, identity, and the painful conflict that all these factors create whenever there is misalignment.